Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Psychology of Work, Why People Do What They Do, a podcast exploring the science and stories behind high-cohesion, high-performing teams. My name is Dr. Bobbi Wegner. I'm a lecturer at Harvard in organizational psychology and the founder of Groups. In each episode, we dive into the minds of industry experts to uncover what drives team and individual dynamics, tackle real-world challenges together, and share actionable insights to help teams feel and function their best. Thanks so much for joining, and let's get started. Hey, everyone. Welcome back. I'm so excited to be here. Today, I'm on the podcast with Greg Troxell, who's a director of talent at Function Health. Greg has spent his career leading talent and recruiting functions inside fast-growing, complex organizations where performance isn't just about hiring great people, but about building systems that allow people to actually do their best work once they're inside. What I really, really appreciate about Greg's perspective is his focus on the human side of performance, why talented people sometimes struggle in strong environments while other teams consistently outperform expectations. He thinks deeply about what actually drives behavior at work, how leadership shapes it, and how psychological safety and accountability need to operate together, not in opposition, which we see like so often. This conversation dives into avoidance masquerading as politeness, the cost of unclear expectations, and how we can design hiring and performance systems that are more human-centered and more effective. I'm just so psyched to have you, Greg. Every time we have a conversation, it's like, bing, 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 bing. We're like kind of jumping all over the place. But tell the listeners about you. What's your story? What's your deal?
I'm so excited to be here and bing, bing, bing even further. But yeah, I'm very typical recruiting world. Like, I think no one actually seeks out to be a recruiter. It finds them. And I was in this path of like figuring out like, what do I actually want to do? And then a recruiter approached me about being a recruiter. And I was like, this is kind of weird.
Whoa, that's very like sort of meta.
Yeah, it's very meta. I got into it and I was like, I started to see it and I was like, okay, you're selling people a career opportunity. Like I started seeing it in different lenses and I just went and was doing well and doing agency. And then as like, the more I did it, the more it started evolving to me of like what this function is actually becoming or evolving to and how it relates to like how business and our work is evolving. And then it kind of clicked for me right around like the boom of Silicon Valley startups, like towards 2020, and then COVID hit. And I saw all the teams getting laid off and a lot of recruiting teams impacted. At that point, I was consulting for a lot of Silicon Valley startups, just like whatever we needed. We can early stage startup. I don't know how to interview to hire as many software engineers as humanly possible. We're about to go IPO. So I saw a lot of different environments and from the recruiting seat. And I realized there's a real story being here. Like how we bring in talent to an organization and how that's managed and how it grows can actually bring in like meaningful revenue to a business. And that's been my mission ever since then, like figuring that out. And it's not like A plus B equals C. There's art involved in these type of metrics and there's so many different variances, but that's what I've been marching towards. I went from like recruit, 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 have a role, fill it mindset to like, how is this role going to influence the company and like be a complete like multiplier for the business moving forward? And how can we put the right person in the right seat with the right manager and the right onboarding program, right? Like I started thinking about the whole picture and it's been very interesting, that journey since of like how to grow a company and like how important talent and the management of that talent is as we scale.
Oh my God, I love it. Yeah, no, it's like, you know, when things come up, like what's it called? Synchronicity. Is that it? Like or chronicity? I'm not sure. But yeah, this idea, someone was just writing on LinkedIn about like force multipliers and really thinking about the role of people and what that is when you bring in the right person in the right spot at the right time in the right team in the right context, like it just force multiplies sort of output on all fronts.
Yeah.
And it seems like what I'm hearing from you, this is my psychologist mind working. It's really alignment, right? Getting the right person and the right role. And then when you can do that, it's magic really, really happens for the individual and the organization.
Yeah. You can feel the difference.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of like EDU articles about like a superstar, what the value of a superstar is versus you call it your average employee. And like, but what it does, what I haven't seen a lot of breakdown is like what is superstar? Like, how did that happen?
Totally.
Superstar easily means like, oh, they hired the best person, but it's like, it's the fit that matters too. And likely, I think more.
100%.
it's an interesting weight and like how that multiplies, to use that word. It really does become exponential, how it just like progresses.
Yeah. You're making me think of, you know, at least in class, we talk a lot about purpose, right? And like, so I don't know how much this fits into the way you think, but it's like, we're always like, if work can be sort of a vehicle of purpose, then the job is not a job. You're just like helping someone accomplish something that mm-hmm. really matters to them. And when you can get that, people are willing to like run through walls to make that happen.
Yeah.
You know? And it feels like you're the little seeker or the
conduit.
The triple hunter.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, that's the piece of it is, I work in the health tech space now, and you see a big difference. Like, obviously people care about healthcare, and but it's interesting seeing like the type of talent interested into different health tech companies. You have people who have like experienced the challenges of the US healthcare system in a negative light and want to fix it. And that's one talent pool. You have people who have personal like challenges in their health, and they want to take more action to fix it. You have folks that like never knew anything about healthcare that read one article. I was like, I read this article from your founder, and I was like, why am I not working for this company? This is the problem I want to solve for the rest of my life. So there's a lot of different reasons like that anyone could jump in, and it could be almost like negative reasons, like your own personal health. And it's like a challenge for you, and you want to work for the challenge. And it could be very like positive, like I want to help people, but there's the none are worse or better than the other, but it's like that intrinsic motivation is the arrival. And then still it's like, how is the organization built to support your talent is like the next piece that we have to, like the next part of the evaluating is like, can you do your best work here? And it's not, maybe not your fault or anything, but like, how do we make that happen? It's our job to make that happen. So that's my nerd brain thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, what it feels like the common denominator is impact. So like people want to make an impact, and there are different reasons why they are coming to you to work, but they want to make an impact in some way.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. So I'd love to have the audience hear more about your company and what you're doing, but you're also making me think like, and we're seeing this a lot because we work with a lot of like health tech type companies that are growing. And so there seems to be this sort of like split, right, between the people who are coming in from like the startup, almost PE side, and then people who are coming in from the health side. Mm-hmm. And there's sometimes not alignment in terms of like, the purpose in some way, like it's totally fine to be driven by dollars, like 100%, right? Yes. And it's totally fine to be driven by making an impact. But sometimes when these worlds come together, it's like the teams can get a little bit like, they're just requires work to get them in alignment and to like get everybody seeing the same end goal.
Yeah, I think of it as like, it's just a simplified phrasing. It's probably not correct, the right one, but like it's just putting everyone in the right bucket per se. Like I joke, at any health tech company sometimes you'll see on interview feedback, like, didn't really seem to attach to the mission. It was like, well, the candidate's not saying they wish there was more cancer. So like everyone's attached to our mission. So like, are they good or not at their job?
You're like, but then can they do the job? That like, it kind of matters here because it's business and work.
Yeah. And to your point, like some people for certain roles, like for a finance role, like in finance, like somebody might be very money motivated or money forward in their communications. And that could seem to some people as like, oh, they weren't really into the mission. Well, they'd be a really bad person if they weren't.
Yeah.
So, but their job is in finance. So of course they're going to be focused on the money.
Yeah, and the money furthers the mission. The money is a cog to like do the things, mm-hmm. but then that narrative has to be made explicit to get people like in alignment.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it's interesting how you, I guess, bucket it, right? It's great. Like if I have a chief of staff who wants to talk about valuations and funding rounds and VCs versus like how passionate they are about healthcare, like that's probably like, yeah, this is kind of what we want.
Yeah.
But like there's a bias associated with it, was what I mean. But how you take that once you bring them into your organization, how you like expand on that is really important, because if you hit the right pieces, like this person will flourish. So the fun part.
Yeah, I love it. Magic maker.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've really seen performance from every vantage point, from like hiring to onboarding and scaling teams. Why do you think talented people sometimes struggle in like objectively good or even great environments? And what are leaders usually missing when they diagnose those struggles?
Yes. This is the problem we'll always look to solve, but I think we already use the word is like great talent doesn't mean success. Like, I think it's almost like a hot take, I think.
Love it.
People think like, oh, you went to this university and you worked at these companies. Great. And that's just not a fact. But I think talent is a multiplier, which is the word we've used. And it only works, it only multiplies when the system around them is designed correctly. Is that, that's how I think about it. So like I could talk to the most talented person, but they have to work in our system, in our environment. And the most talented person might not. And we might get more out of somebody not as talented, I put in quotes, because that's like a variance, but they could do more. They could create more outcomes, more impact, because you understand the system, the stage we're at, what we're going through, all the intricacies, like who their manager is, how that team is built, how they operate day to day, what's their meeting cadence like. All of those nuances really do help determine like the success of an employee. And you almost think about slope. And especially in an early stage startup, the problem that we're solving today will change very soon. So we can learn and build and grow into these environments that we're going to go through that we don't know what they are going to be. Like, it's almost like leading and learning through the unknown. So like the multiplier aspect, we have to think of the system, because we don't, like most startups can't even tell you what 6 months down the road will look like. Totally. So I think talented people really struggle when there's misalignment, there's wrong incentives, there's unclear expectations, which can happen very often in startups, all of those. And like if there's, especially culturally is a big one, if we're talking about the impact and mission of the person. But if you're very talented and it's a, say you're just a doer mindset and that's your talent. If you're in a culture that values like status over contribution, it's going to be very misaligned for you, but it doesn't mean you're not great at what you do. It's just a misalignment, and it's hard to excel in those environments when your like personal values aren't multiplying in that way. So like in an average environment, which is subjective too, but like they produce great people because they create some pressure because things are broken and people can build through that pressure. And that's where they shine. Like you need to create clarity. You need to create ownership. And so builders in an average environment, we say, like can really shine in those. So it's really important to know like kind of what you need and what you excel at to determine like where that goes. So I think like people don't necessarily like rise to their potential per se. Like people will reach their potential, but the path to getting there is the system that you could ride along with. I guess that's probably poorly said, but yeah, I hope you get the imagery.
No, my mind's going in like all these different directions, but we think about a couple things that came to mind. One is like people don't often think about anxiety as being optimal. And anyways, you're like, God, avoid that. I don't want to be stressed. But like, actually, there is a optimal level of anxiety where people are performing better, right? And I feel like that's in some ways what you're talking about in terms of an average environment, when like, when there's alignment between the person's skill set and then kind of being in that context of a little bit of pressure that's going to help them build or do what they have to do to move the needle. And that's also making me think, and like psychologists, we're always thinking about, you know, at least like from a health psych perspective, it's like, all right, what's going on with the individual? What's going on in the social context? What's going on with like the sort of psychology of like how people are thinking, and how are all these things like fitting together to really promote wellness or like health in some way? And you're really, sounds like you're almost using a similar kind of philosophy, but instead of wellness, it's just like team optimization. So how is like, what's the person bringing, what's the climate around them? And then how are these things kind of intersecting at the right time to like be the best it can be?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. There's times I go to, oh my gosh, it's the book's Radical Candor by Kim Scott.
Oh yeah.
She mentions this concept of like superstars and rock stars.
Yeah.
Superstar is like very ambitious person who wants to grow in their career and rise to the C-suite. And the rock star is like, I love what I'm doing and I want to do it. And this is the bucket I want to stay in. I just want to keep doing this and I do it well and I know how to do it. And this is it. And it's interesting because within your life, you could be either one of those multiple different times. Like I just had my first kid. I probably went from a superstar to a rock star.
Yeah.
Like I was like, how do I be a dad?
Yeah, you're like, I don't know. Like,
that became a new challenge. And then like throughout our lives, we'll change in those. And like when I'm in my superstar, like when I feel like, okay, I wanna climb, I wanna grow in my career, ingesting everything, I wanna take on the challenges. And I could be in a fantastic environment that's fully buttoned up. The company's doing fantastic, but I'm not getting challenged. And it will like go directly counteract with like the mode I'm in because I need to be challenged. And that's how I'm going to climb and be that superstar. And it's like optimizing for comfort, essentially. Mm-hmm. It could be an example of a great environment, but like why I've typically been attracted to early stage startups, not to call them average environments, but like the expectations are very clear because like the failure is very obvious. Mm-hmm. Like we know what failure looks like. We like responsibility is like completely unavoidable because you own this and this would mean failure if you don't hit this mark. If you're not successful, we fail. And mm-hmm. like, so that's like just the unique environment that like, I know I love that space of being in. Some people hate that space, but some people are way more talented than me than hate that space, right? So like, that's a tie-in mm-hmm. I make. And it's like, I talk to people a lot. A lot of folks reach out. It's like, you know, friends and even strangers like about career advice. What should I do with my career? And I always think like, what us people don't do is like, when I'm a recruiter or anyone on my team, when we get a new role, we do kickoff calls and we have a job kit. And the job kit is like, here's the role. Here's like what success looks like in 90 days. Here's what it looks like in a year. Here are the must-haves. Here are the things we're not interested in. And we don't do that with our lives.
Totally.
And if you did that look at yourself, like that type of like how a company would launch a search, if you did that about what you need in a job, I bet we'd solve a lot of like, we'd get to this. I think you'd know very clearly what you need to be successful and you would target your search into those environments.
Maybe you should build that.
Yeah.
I mean, that could be like, I feel like you could build that like right now on like Lovable or Replit or something.
Let's do it. I mean?
Like just build it and go see, you know, it's like an assessment that you're using to like look for jobs so you could tag it, kind of integrate it with like whatever like hiring platforms are.
Could answer it down to like, you know, you say this and it narrows down the search pool, like almost like an ATS could like
totally
put in the job recs. It tells you how many available candidates there could be. And if you put another filter, it diminishes. And
yeah, it's like a reverse search.
Yeah.
That's super cool. I was thinking of something as you were talking and then I got distracted with that. What that would look like if you're building it. But I think there you're talking a lot about just what I was thinking is that like systems and humans, and I think about this as humans too, like need some kind of homeostasis, right? So it feels really bad when work's chaotic and home life's chaotic and the socio-cultural climate around us chaotic. Then you're like, you know, we need to feel safe in some way. Mm-hmm. And I can totally identify with what you're saying. Like I love startup too. It's wildly chaotic, wildly unpredictable. I'm like jumping into the fire at all moments and I like it, right? But I also feel like my home life is... I have three kids. So people are like, how do you do that? Whatever. But I'm like, it's actually relatively stable. My kids are in generally pretty decent spots. Like I feel like I've front end loaded the parenting kind of love and stuff. So they're in like kind of feeling good about themselves. And they're at a point where they're starting to individuate on their own. So I need to be present, but it's a different type of way of being in relationship with them.
Yeah.
And it frees me up to go do kind of startup. But if I had little babies, that'd be really hard, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And like very stereotypical of me, but I'm a sports guy. So like my sports analogy is we see this actually a lot. Like we could take it out of the business world, but if you take like a five-star athlete or a number one draft pick, like
totally. I was thinking that when you were talking, their sports psychology is like the same.
Yeah. You see those number one picks, they disappear in environments.
Yeah. Moneyball.
And it's not that they weren't talented. Yeah. Moneyball is a great example. Like how many number one draft picks didn't pan out in the NFL or whatever?
100%.
And it's because like the difference isn't really the talent. All of those getting drafted or going to these universities, they're talented, but it's the reps, it's the belief, it's the responsibility, it's the coaching. Like that's the differentiator, I feel. And you see these top, especially in high school, like top recruits go to these top universities and some phase out because they don't get the reps. Like there's better people there.
Yeah.
And like some of those guys need the reps and some of the talented guys like don't need the reps. They just need to practice with the best and they don't really get the reps. But like, that's the differentiator. It's like there's a sauce within that that's very hard to calculate and quantify that. Mm-hmm. I think that sauce is like what companies and what we all look for is like, what is that right spot for me and like for my company and how do we grow with that? I don't think anybody's denying that this person didn't have talent or anything. It's just, where was the system broken for that person is how I think of it.
Yeah. No, it's like, at least with our work with groups, we're always like, how are we? We're not like mental health. People that are like mental healthy, we're like, we're not one-on-one coaching. And yeah. We're more than just like team coaching. We're really looking at the patterns of interaction on teams, right? Both in coaching, but also using ambient data to be like, and really helping teams understand themselves, because the connectedness between the team is that climate, right? So how can you build those connections in a really strong way and help everybody on the team perform? And there's so many things that go into that, right? But that's where org psych's really helpful, because it helps you break down like alignment, like personality factors, communication, understanding like how teams show up. Are they virtual? Are they hybrid or distributed? Do you have new players? Do you have old players? Like who is the thing here? And sports psychology is like the thing people most understand when we're describing. We're just taking a sports psychology model and applying it to all teams everywhere and democratizing this.
Oh, cool.
And using like a real team psychologist for all teams, but also an agentic team psychologist to like help during in between. And so like the Moneyball metaphor is like one that kind of keeps coming up.
Yeah, it makes total sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. So you've talked about something that shows up constantly on teams. So it's really avoidance disguised as politeness.
Yeah.
So like, why is that pattern so common? I see it too, especially in high-performing or values-driven organizations. And what damage does a quietly do to trust and accountability?
Yeah. I'm also a people pleaser, so I definitely struggle with this.
Yeah.
I have to think about it. Like the way I process is like, I owe it to them. If I really care about them.
It's an investment in the relationship because you care.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
You know?
And I think it helps when I like to lead with like a lot of context. I think context is good. So I think knowing what good looks like is very helpful. And you need to feel safe enough to talk about when things aren't at that level. Like that's the two biggest pieces. And you can't have the fear of disappointing someone when like you're doing that. And I think it's like going back to like, if you actually care about this person, like this should be something, this is a requirement. Like I'm using strong language, but like, if you actually care about them, like help and like, don't sugarcoat it. But I think it gets mixed in the fact that I don't want them to not like me, or I don't want them to think I'm yelling at them. There's just like this, the mental battle that you go through. It's like, you think you're being kind by avoiding the conversation almost, but you're actually like hurting their growth and development and that project and your trust within the organization, because your report or your teammate isn't delivering like in a specific example. So I think it erodes trust over time, because I think your team becomes less effective because you can't communicate the hard truths or give the feedback. And I think it's like an erosion that occurs.
Totally. You're making me think of when we're talking about like people and all of us like seek homeostasis. It's because we want some kind of control. If we're spiraling out all over the place, we're in control. So that's like one fundamental human need. The other one's really belonging. And so I think like, I don't want to give you hard feedback because I want you to like me, because we're hardwired for connection, social by nature. It kind of puts me at risk if I'm like going to rupture this relationship. I think that happens subconsciously for people, but it's like, we like to be liked because we want to be part of a group. Because group equals safety, you know?
I think that's where a lot of my like fears initially came from. It's like, I want to be liked.
I want to be in good standing. Like, you know, I want to belong. But I think we always think about like connection, cohesion. Communication is the vehicle to increase connection, cohesion. And then what you're really talking about, you said you like to give a lot of context. This is where I think coaching comes in really, really good, because really well. Because it helps you say the hard things, but preserve the fact that like, I care for you. We've already built the relational capital. There's nothing you can say that would make me judge you. You know, I'm coming from a place of goodness, and that like, we have this shared goal of you being successful here. So in the name of that, I'm going to say this, and I still care for you. So like teaching leaders, like those skills allow them to hold the directness, but also the care. And I think sometimes leaders just don't know how to do that. So then they're like, don't do it at all. Or they're like almost the opposite of radical candor, which is like brutal honesty. And then they like accidentally like kind of blow someone up. And then they're like, wow, that felt horrible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I got this great advice in a, like a communications coaching course very recently. And they put the perspective of like, think of somebody you really admire. Now write down what they would say in the situation. And I was like, wow, like that really put things in different perspectives. It could be a family member. It could be somebody you look up to in your career. It could be coach of a sports team, like anyone that you admire, like think of three. Now write down on a piece of paper, like how would they have this conversation?
Yeah. Like so good.
Results that I got from that were pretty interesting because like it was definitely different from how I would deliver it. And yeah. I thought on my own by just envisioning how they would do it. Right.
Totally. And then you can build it if you can kind of like see it.
Oh my gosh. It definitely changed the way I handle some of those conversations.
Another thing, this is very like therapist-y of me, but it's super helpful. So instead of being like, I'm just giving you feedback, which feels one directional, you know, it's like, listen, we talk a lot about noticing and wondering. So like, hey, Greg, like I know being successful here is really important to you. I'm rooting for you. I hope you know that all the things. I'm noticing fill in the blank observable behavior. I'm noticing you're a little bit late on some of your deliverables. And I know that comes from a place of wanting to do it right.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering, like, have you noticed that too? And do you think it's like problematic? So you're coming at it from a place of curiosity and joining the person in a conversation.
Yeah.
Versus like, dude, you're like always late and you're going to get in trouble. You know what I mean? So it's like kind of neutralizes power differential that I think allows feedback to be received better.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah. Yeah. Of course.
How, like, what's interesting is, like, I've always been a person that I ask for feedback all the time. I want more of it. I want it to be bad. I ask my team for bad feedback. Like,
yeah, punch me in the face.
Like, yeah, but that I know isn't shared. Like, how do you get somebody to be able to receive like conversations? Or like, if it is the hard truth, like the conversation, noticing and wondering, what if that's not hitting? What if
And
it's almost like a casual conversation versus like feedback.
Yeah. Like this has to change. So two things. One thing we do is we use like user manuals. I don't know if you do these, but like based when we like give a team an assessment, which is normal stuff around personality styles and all that, there's embedded questions around like user manual stuff. How do you like to get feedback? What style best works with you? And then that goes into kind of like how you approach these conversations. But say you are trying the things and you're coming at this in a very like diplomatic, coachy way, and it doesn't feel like it's working. Mm-hmm. I think that's where you can differentiate like your role responsibilities from your care. So it's like, listen, Greg, like I'm just noticing we've had this conversation like 5 times. And there's a part of me that's just so rooting for you, but I'm noticing like, this isn't actually changing, but my job as your boss is to really get this done. How are we going to solve this together? And is this really actually solvable? Let's talk to, if it's not solvable, like what are the blocks? And is this actually really the right role? Or is it better to help think about other roles where there might be more alignment?
Yeah.
Like that kind of thing.
You're good at this.
I mean, that's what like coaching is. You're like staying in alignment and that there's like, I don't know. I know we're coming to the end and I want to ask you this other question because it's a good one that coming from you, not me, but you said answer isn't just better communication, but clear expectations paired with psychological safety. Mm-hmm. So from a talent and leadership perspective, what does it actually look like in design, hiring and performance systems that support both honesty and humanity? And I feel like we're starting to talk a little bit about this, but like, how do you hold psychological safety and accountability together?
Yeah. Oof, this is, and in designing systems around it too, is like, so I think of it as like, you have to like strip it all down. And it's like, what's the outcome that we want to achieve? It's like, that's the first thing I'm thinking about always is like, outcome, like what do we need this to look like? And I think we eventually will get into the reality of like, this is what we do very well. And this is what we're not good at as a team before we even start building, hiring around it. And we need the transparency in that process to understand, like I've dealt with this so much in hiring processes at early stage startups when candidates ask about work-life balance. Like my response to my team is tell them what the work-life balance is.
Yeah, it's gonna blow up anyway if they're not like, you know.
It's so critical. So like for that's just giving an example. But when a team truly understands where their gap is, like that's where like I guess that honesty, the development, the psychological safety, we kind of alert to everyone that this is the gap.
Yeah.
And it's like, if we're hiring for a role, there's 10 competencies. All of them are important, but we'll have the team rank like in order, like what is the most important? Obviously, we know all of them are important. What we'll find is like most teams will, all the important things are all the things that they're all good at. So they think like, well, I'm good at this and I'm doing well. So here's, these are the most important things. But it actually becomes the inverse is now what we need to hire for. So now we're looking for those skill sets that we aren't actually covering. And you have to create this like neurodiversity within the team, people that are
totally
good at different skill sets and complement each other's skill sets. And that eventually starts to build out gaps. But then you can create micro adjustments throughout the year. Like if we do have people on one side that are very strong in hiring, we hire for different, increasing the importance of other competencies to create that adjustment to solve the gap within your team. And like,
I love that.
Creating those environments that you have to be very transparent. You have to tell the candidates, like, this is exactly what the challenges are today. This is what you're going to be jumped into. And from day one, like, you are a director at this company and this is what it looked like. But from day one here, you're going to have no budget to add to your team and you're going to have to build it. And this is the challenges that the team is facing today. And this is what it looks like.
Can you do it?
Yeah, exactly. And just like, it's like just being like, it's weird because like just be honest.
then be like, can we do it? And like, this is the way I can support you. This way I can't support you. Are you? Yeah. It's just super directness. And like that's where psychology, people are always like, it's so emotional. And I'm like, it's actually just being able to do that really well.
Yeah.
It's like putting it on the line in a very clear, kind way. And then being like, is it workable? It kind of takes all that implicit stuff out of it and makes it explicit. And then now you're just negotiating. Like, does it work? Is it not going to work? Like,
yeah. Obviously companies care about people, but like you see it very quickly in the companies that have systems that don't reflect that. And where like dysfunction comes from. I think that's just where the dysfunction happens. It's like, you see it today with the return to office versus remote. Like that, like I think really does poke at this in a way. Like some people excel at return to office. Some people excel at working remotely. And depending on where you are in your life, you need one or the other more often. Mm-hmm. And that, when a company changes that system for you, you may not be able to be successful. And within that system, or you would have to change some like routine of yourself to be successful. So to be able to have that, the psychological safety, to be able to like reflect on that, to share that, to like talk to your team or your boss. And if you are a supervisor, to your team about like, here's what we need. Like, this isn't working now because this is the system. Here's what we need to do to change it. Like, how can we, like, what am I missing? How can we do this? Like, I think those are the teams that end up being very successful, but it's like those challenges will just keep coming over the course of our lifetime. And it's like, it's almost like you hear a lot of companies like, I want to build one system and just hit it on autopilot and let it run. But like, they can't because something's going to change it.
Relationship.
To do that. Yeah.
Work relationships are still relationships and they change over time, you know? So this idea that like, this
perfect.
But it's a social negotiation. So, and it's not about what I want or you want. It's like, what are the goals of the team? And then how do we best get there? How can we like negotiate the nuances of this?
Yeah.
And then you also talked about, which I love, this could be like, just is this, you know, when you hear about neurodivergence, is always with a like, ooh, you're different than mainstream kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. And you're really talking about it as like, the key to a high-performing team is neurodivergence, because now you're like, have multiple capabilities and multiple views of the world.
Yeah.
Which is powerful.
Yeah. And I think when you're trying to build a company, you think of like nomenclature as headcount planning. And you have to be strategic about how you're going to grow your team. Say you're growing an operations team and we're going to get this many customers this year. That's the goal. And it will equal X revenue. So you have to build an operational workforce to manage that and like create retention within the users of the product and whatever it may be. And you're thinking of like, okay, I need X people. Cause a lot of leaders think of ratios. Like if we have this many company customers, then I need this many people to manage that group. And that's how you're thinking about building your headcount plan. But what you're not thinking is like what a lot of recruiting teams do and a lot of managers do is they hire those amount of people with those titles. But what they're finding is they I keep hiring more and more people. Like we're not actually like, we're not getting more efficient. We're not getting, and it's because you're not actually thinking about like, what are those particular skill sets that are.
Well, the systems too around it, right? And like how they're actually pulling these people together.
Yeah.
Versus plopping someone in, like, go have at it.
Yeah. So, And then you ask the question, I'll ask a lot of hiring managers the question, like, oh, my ratio is 1 to 5 or whatever it may be. And so, okay, so if we get to this much, you're saying that your team needs to be 20% the size of that? Like, is that, is that like realistically at this scale? And they're like, no, we would have to get efficient. It's like, okay, how?
Yeah.
And that's where like, you have to like really do the dive in and talk to your teams and find out where the gaps are and what are we missing? And I think what I've found is like throughout the year, because you're building a headcount plan just on people and ratios, not really the skill sets, is like creating those adjustments like in the moment when we're launching role one. What is everyone on your team really good at? This. Okay, let's not. Like, it's important that they have the skill set, but let's not make this a big factor. If they have it, great. If they don't, okay. Like, because this is covered. But where is everyone not good at today? And like, or where are we lacking, or only one person's good at? When you start to have those conversations, like, it allows that org to make those adjustments quickly. And then everyone benefits off of each other. You have somebody to go to learn from for this particular skill set. And we all may be good at all of it, but there's this person. Like, we could all be good at Google Sheets or Excel, but when we hire the first person on our team that can create pivot tables, everybody gets better. Like, totally. Yeah, we're good at Excel, but like we don't know the pivot tables and all that fun stuff yet. And then you hire that first person on the team that does pivot tables, and now everyone on the team does pivot tables.
Yeah.
So it's like, it creates this like this step up, and you see it in efficiency and team and performance. But I only think you can get to that point if you have to be open to getting there and finding out where the problems are. And yeah.
I know we could keep talking about this forever, and I want to keep talking about this forever, but I feel like the listeners are going to be like, all right.
Like, too much. Yeah,
because I feel like you and I will do that bing, 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 bing.
We warn people of the bing.
Yeah, more people for the binging. Well, I just appreciate you, Greg, taking time, and what a fun conversation. And I have like 5 more threads of that already in my mind that I'm like cutting off right now. But anything you want to end on just as we are getting ready to end?
I think we said it all now, but the main theme of that is like, it's very powerful to understand you individually, and if you're leading teams or on a team, like, what are the ways in which we can get the most out of this? And like, it's interesting when you go through that exploration where that gap is, and if you can fix 10% of that gap, how much improvement you will see. So like, I think it's just weirdly what I found is the exercise that most don't go through. I think it's just so valuable. And that's where I'd have everybody to leave off. But like, start with yourself first too. It's like, understand what you like, what you don't like. Like, we talked before this even, like, when are you energized? When are you not? Like, those things are valuable, and you're going to be able to get that acceleration that you're looking for if that's what you're looking for.
I love it.
That's it.
That's it. Well, I know you have a lot more than just that, but I appreciate you coming, and I just, can't wait to keep chatting. Thanks for being here.
Yes. Thanks so much. This is so much fun.
I know. Me too. I find it so much fun too.